Follow me into the jungle. What's up, everybody? We're about to get started. So if you guys want to grab your Bibles, grab your pens, get your handouts ready, because we're about to rip through, and we're going to go through chapter 2 today. So we're going to be on page 7, 625. We'll start there, and we'll end in 626. All right, in your Bibles, page 625 to 626. Daniel chapter 2, verses 1 through 30 is where we'll be killing it today. And while you're getting there, we'll just kind of walk through our intro that we've been walking through every week. And this one right here is that Daniel was written at the beginning of Daniel's exile in 605 BC until the time that it ended. Okay, so over the 70 years that Daniel was there in exile, that was the time that this book that we're reading today was written. What's up, man? How you doing? There you go. Good to see you. I like the smile. All right. So Daniel, he was one of the first people to be carried away into exile. And when Babylon came and on Judah, all right, he was there for 70 years. And so this book of Daniel that we're walking through is split into two halves. Like we said, we've been saying this every week, verses chapters 1 through 6. A lot of people are familiar with Daniel and the lion's den, them in the fiery furnace getting out of there. Everybody's familiar with those stories, but a lot of people aren't familiar with the second half of Daniel, chapters 7 through 12. A lot of imagery, high imagery stuff in there. So we won't really touch there, but we'll kind of touch a little bit at the end of the year just to talk about, man, God reigns over every period of time, even in the future, okay? So here's a quote that we have about Daniel, and it says, Daniel's courage and faithfulness in a land of cruelty and captivity can easily tempt us to make him the primary hero of the text. In doing so, we neglect Daniel's own message that God is the hero of this story, that God is absolutely the hero of this story. And then the second one is that Daniel acts on the grace of God, repeatedly provides, but God is always the one who first provides the opportunity, resources, and rescue needed for Daniel's faithfulness. If we reverse the order and make God's grace dependent on Daniel's goodness, then we forsake the gospel message Daniel is telling and produce the hero worship of adventure tales rather than the divine worship of the gospel according to Daniel. And that's the ESV Gospel Transformation, all right? So I think everybody's got their Bibles ready. Where's your Bible at, guys? Get your Bibles. Page 625. We're going to read through starting on verse 1. Everybody should be there. If you're there, say, ka-ka. That's most of us. Ka-ka. All right. Okay. Chapter 2, verse 1. Let's start going. Nebuchadnezzar's dream. In the second year of the reign of Nebuchadnezzar, Nebuchadnezzar had dreams. His spirit was troubled, and his sleep left him. Then the king commanded that the magicians and the enchanters, the sorcerers, and the Chaldeans be summoned to tell the king his dreams. So they came in and stood before the king, and the king said to them, I had a dream, and my spirit is troubled to know the dream. Then the Chaldeans said to the king in Aramaic, O king, live forever. Tell your servants the dream, and we will show you the interpretation. The king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the word from me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you shall be torn, turn your page, limb from limb, rough life, and your houses shall be laid in ruins. But if you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and its interpretation. They answered a second time and said, let the king tell his servants the dream, and we will show its interpretation. And the king answered and said, I know with certainty that you are trying to gain time, because you see that the word from me is firm. If you do not make the dream known to me, there is but one sentence for you. You have agreed to speak lying and corrupt words before me till the time changes. Therefore, tell me the dream, and I shall know that you can show me its interpretation. The Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demand, for no great and powerful king has asked any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. And the thing that the king asks is difficult, and no one can show it to the king except the gods, whose dwelling is not with the flesh. Because of this, the king was angry and very furious and commanded that all the wise men of Babylon be destroyed. So the decree went out, and the wise men were about to be killed, and they sought Daniel and his companions to kill them. Then Daniel replied with prudence and discretion to Arioch, the captain of the king's guard, who had gone out to kill the wise men of Babylon. He declared to Arioch, the king's captain, why is the decree of the king so urgent? Then Arioch made the matter known to Daniel, and Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the interpretation to the king. Take a breath. And then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions. And he told them to seek mercy from God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. Then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the name of God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons and removes kings and sets up kings. And he gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what's in the darkness, and the light dwells in him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me wisdom and might, and I have now made known to us the king's matter. Therefore, Daniel went to Arioch, whom the king had appointed to destroy the wise men of Babylon. He went and said thus to him, do not destroy the wise men of Babylon. Bring me in before the king, and I will show the king the interpretation. Then Arioch brought in Daniel and before the king in haste and said thus to him, I have found among the exiles from Judah a man who will make known to the king the interpretation. The king declared to Daniel, whose name was Belteshazzar, are you able to make known to me the dream that I have seen and its interpretation? And Daniel answered the king, no wise men, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show to the king the mystery that the king has asked. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to King Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head as you lay in bed are these. To you, O king, as you lay in bed, came thoughts of what would be after this. And he who reveals mysteries may know to you what is to be. But as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because of any wisdom that I have, more than all the living, but in order that the interpretation may be made known to the king, that you may know the thoughts of your mind. All right? Woo! All right, so the bottom line that you have for today, get that pen, is this one right here, is that the hope the world needs lives in me. The hope the world needs lives in me. Where's my water? Water. All right. So as we read this, we don't know what the dream is quite yet, but we know that this king had a dream, and it brought him to this place where he couldn't even sleep anymore. Said that his spirit was troubled, that it took away his sleep. My man was just like, I mean, you ever had a dream like that before where you're just like, I'm not going back to bed? That's a rough dream. I haven't necessarily had one like that before, but that had to be a terrible dream if you're like, I'm not going back to sleep. So this is what happens. And so for a king to have this type of dream, he knew that it was going to have significance, not just for him, but for his whole nation, all the people that he was leading. So he wanted to figure out what this dream meant so that he could be ready to counteract it or to take it into consideration. Like, he had to be ready. All right, so this is what he's dealing with. When he's not telling anybody what the dream is, but he's kind of just dealing with this, and it's giving my man nightmares while he's awake. All right, flip that screen for me, Cam. Two times, bam, bam. Okay, so King Nebuchadnezzar, he knew this wasn't just some ordinary dream, because what does he say to the guys that usually, interpret his dreams? He tells them, hey, man, you go ahead and tell me what I dreamed and give me the interpretation, too. All right, so if anybody in this room today can tell me what I dreamt last night, I'll give you $100. Who can do it? No, I didn't dream about Kidoba. Austin, what did I dream about? No. Go ahead. No, I didn't. I should have, maybe. Yes, sir. No tacos. Go. No. You said eating cheese? Oh. What'd you say? No. Go ahead. No. Terry. No. Never mind. No. No, Ducky. Oh, man, it was a dream come true, but I didn't dream about last night, though. Sick. Oh, I didn't. All right, so who said nothing? All right, so he got it right. I didn't dream about anything last night. Well, now tell me what that means. What does it mean? No. All right. All right. So listen, all that to say is that it's impossible for you to tell if I did have a dream. Like, I was honest, I could have said I had a crazy dream. But I didn't dream about anything last night. If I did, I don't remember. But you had to tell the king the dream and then give him the interpretation of this crazy dream. All right, so this is what they said to him. They say, hey, they thought they were slick, and they told the king, man, tell us the dream. Go ahead and tell it to us, and we're going to explain it to you, all right? Go ahead and tell it to us, and we got you, king. And he's like, you guys, you think you're slick. Like, the word for me is firm. Here's what's going to happen if you don't tell me the dream and give me the interpretations. This is what he says. So the king answered and said to the Chaldeans, the word for me is firm. If you do not make known to me the dream and its interpretation, you shall be torn limb from limb, and your houses shall be laid in ruins. That sucks. Like, the king summons you, and he's like, if you can't do this, I'm going to tear you limb from limb. But if you show the dream and its interpretation, you shall receive from me gifts and rewards and great honor. Therefore, show me the dream and its interpretation. So they come back with it. They're again like, hey, man, like, king, if you tell us the dream, we'll give you the interpretation. Like, they're trying to be slick, you know, trying to buy time. But he says, man, there is one sentence for you if you can't do what I'm asking of you, all right? So this is what I would say, is that there was no hope found in the greatest in Babylon. That the greatest people that the king summoned, right? He summoned the enchanters, the magicians, the Chaldeans, those are guys who could read those omens that we talked about, reading those dreams. And he summoned all these great people to his bedside, but there was no one who could step in and answer the king. There was no hope found there. No answer, no hope from the great people of Babylon. All right, verses 10 and 11. It says, the Chaldeans answered the king and said, there is not a man on earth who can meet the king's demands, for no great and powerful king has asked such a thing of any magician or enchanter or Chaldean. The thing that the king asks is difficult. No one can show it to the king except the gods whose dwelling is not with the flesh. So they make the statement, like, what you're asking is impossible. Only person that can do this, you know, is the gods, and they don't dwell with us, right? So what they say is the truth. Like, they make this true statement about their own gods, right? That they're saying about their own gods, like, they can't do it. Like, the gods that that we have made and are dwelling with us, like, they can't do it. So the gods that are dwelling with them have no power, right? That's false. They're talking about their own gods here. So what does Nebuchadnezzar do? Go ahead and flip that, Cam. What does Nebuchadnezzar do is that he goes and says, destruction upon all you wise men who said you were wise, could do all these things but cannot. So they make this truthful statement, right? That there's nobody who can do it, right? And what does Nebuchadnezzar do with this statement? He says, man, destroy that which is false. So if all you guys are false, I'm going to destroy it. And so the truth of it is that there was only a person who has true contact with a divine thing can make this interpretation. He can give them this dream, can give them the interpretation, can fulfill this demand. It's the only person. And they've made it clear that all those people, his sorcerers, his magicians, all those guys made it clear that there was no hope amongst them, that nobody could do it. But what we find in the story is that there is hope in a man who's God, right? He's a man that's been in captivity, who's been exiled, but there's hope in this man and his God. All right, so verse 16 in the same chapter. It says, Daniel went in and requested the king to appoint him a time that he might show the king to the interpretation. All right, so man, look at the faith of Daniel, right? They came to Daniel and was like, man, we're coming to kill you. All right, before he even like has prayed and has asked God what the meaning is of this dream and interpretation, before he's even done it, he's like, hey, man, don't kill me. Just make an appointment with the king, and I'll let him know what's up. I'll explain to him what's his dream, his interpretation, right? This is just a man of faith. Like, he already knows what God is going to do, right? He just makes this statement before he even goes into prayer with God, because he knows, right? You can tell he's a man that's been in everyday obedience with God, because he makes this faithful statement, like, go ahead, make my appointment. Okay, so I would say is that he is a man that walked into the good works that was prepared for him by God, all right? So this is what Ephesians chapter 2, verse 10 says, For we are his workmanship, created in Christ Jesus for good works, which God prepared beforehand that we should walk in them. All right, so like in that first quote, that it's the second quote that we talked about today, how God is the one providing the grace and the resources for Daniel, right? And this is the very same thing that God is preparing for him, these good works for him to walk into, right? Because he could have heard that statement from the guard, like, hey, man, we're here to kill you. He could have heard that and been like, I'm done, right? He could have went into a fearful mode. He could have feared. He could have did all these things. But instead of that, he makes a statement of faith, right? Because you could say, like, what would happen if Daniel didn't do that? Like, if Daniel didn't say, all right, well, go ahead and make my appointment with the king because I'm coming with an answer for him. Like, what would have happened? I mean, he would have been dead. Like, all his friends would have been dead. We wouldn't have the book of Daniel. Right? We wouldn't have all these great stories that we're so aware of. Right? That wouldn't be going down, because Daniel wouldn't have walked into the good works that were prepared for him by God himself, right? But what we can say about Daniel is that, man, he's a man, his life is showing evidence that he is daily walking and communing with God, obeying God, being obedient to him. And we can say that about his life, because what he does, right, he makes a statement that nobody's just gonna make that isn't close to God, that's not being obedient to him every day in the little things. right? Being obedient in the little things that he's walking with God every day in, that he can make these great statements of faith, right? It doesn't just come out of anywhere, but somebody being faithful every day, obedience with God. So this is what happens in verses 17 and 18. It says, then Daniel went to his house and made the matter known to Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, his companions, and told them to seek mercy from the God of heaven concerning this mystery, so that Daniel and his companions might not be destroyed with the rest of the wise men of Babylon. So he gets in with his friends. They get down. They start praying together. You know, they're doing the thing that's showing, man, I already know the routine. Like, I already know it's going to go down, and I'm going to get down on my knees with my friends. We're going to be praying, lifting God up. And what we find out is that what God preserves them, that God preserves his righteous ones, that those who are seeking him, seeking to be obedient with him, following him every day, that God is seeking, well, God is providing and watching over his righteous ones. Can you click that for me, Cam? Boom. So then we see Daniel and his friends, right? They're seeking God. Like, there's an action on their part that they're seeking God, his mercy, through prayer. So this is what's happening, right? Right, Tanner? Boom. So their everyday self-denial, their everyday obedience, those things are happening, and we're seeing a picture of it in their lives, right? That is because from last week when we talked about, they made that resolve to not disobey God, that they were going to make that stand. They weren't going to cross that line in their culture, right? They're making a stand. You can tell that, like, it's an everyday thing, because they come to this point, and the first thing that they do is what they get together and they pray to God to find out, man, God, what's happening? Can you show us your mercy? You know, pour your mercy out upon us. And what God does is that he answers them. And it's just showing, man, they already know what God is going to do. They're already, like, making these moves that's showing that what God is to them, who God is to them in their everyday lives, all right? So I want you to grab your Bibles, turn to page 226, and we're going to just read through verses 19 through 23 together. Verses 19 through 23. 626. We're just going to read how Daniel responds to God revealing this mystery to him. And I'll go ahead and start on verse 19. And it says, then the mystery was revealed to Daniel in a vision of the night. Then Daniel blessed the God of heaven. Daniel answered and said, blessed be the God of the God forever and ever, to whom belong wisdom and might. He changes times and seasons. He removes kings and sets up kings. He gives wisdom to the wise and knowledge to those who have understanding. He reveals deep and hidden things. He knows what is in the darkness, and light dwells with him. To you, O God of my fathers, I give thanks and praise, for you have given me what might, wisdom and might, for you have made known to me what we asked of you, for you have made known to us the king's matter. All right, so we find out that even though, like, all these great people of Babylon were gathered together in the king's room, and, you know, they couldn't figure out what this dream was, what this interpretation was, what we find out is that there is hope in the God of the people who were exiled. And these exiled people who were in captivity, who were dragged away thousands of miles, in them is the hope of this whole nation, right? So what happens? That God is up for the task that is beyond Daniel's ability, beyond Daniel's understanding, right? It was something outside of him that he couldn't just come up and make up to the king, or they would have all been dead. It was something outside of him. But we find out that the God is up for that task. That's beyond our ability, man. So good. Okay, so, and we find out through that little prayer that God is the one who is in control of history, that he's all-powerful. He's the one that's setting up and removing kings, that he's the one that's all-powerful over everything. He's setting the course for history, and that he's the one that gives wisdom to those who seek it, right? Daniel and his friends, the ones seeking wisdom, seeking to hear from God, and they're the ones who receive from him, right? This is what Proverbs chapter 2, verse 6 says, for the Lord gives wisdom, from his mouth come knowledge and understanding. Now, I've talked about that a lot in here, how God is the one who will freely give wisdom and understanding to those who are willing to seek it, like it's a hidden treasure, like something that they're going to work for, like something that's worthy, that's something that's of worth. When we seek it like that, then God is freely giving wisdom to us when we ask of it. Okay? So we find, right, that wisdom and might belong to God. That is, it's him, because no one in that whole nation could reveal this dream. Like, it came from God. No one can do it. Wisdom and might belong to him. And that he gives wisdom and understanding. That he gives it to us. Just like I said, there's nobody who can take credit. Even if people who say, like, man, I got wisdom and understanding, just that's just who I am. That came from God, even if they didn't give him credit. everything is coming from him. That he's the one who reveals mystery. He's the one that's making things known, that the things that were in the darkness, he's bringing light to. Things that were in the darkness, he's bringing light to and unveiling it before Daniel. So this is the God that's happening. Go ahead and flip that from the cam. This is what's happening with the God that Daniel is serving. And so, again, he gets done with this prayer, and he gives his thanks to God, and he's ready. My man is bold. He's ready to say these words to the guy who was ready to kill them. This is what he says. Then Arioch brought in Daniel before the king in haste and said thus to him, I have found among known to the king the interpretation. Again, so we got hope among the exiled people, among the people who are enslaved. There's hope for this whole nation. Okay? So what it's telling us that simply is that, man, God hasn't forgotten about his people. That even though they're in captivity, even though they're have been sent off because of judgment, that God is still with them. That he hasn't left them. That he's here caring for them, even in far-off lands, that God is still watching over and caring for his people, providing for them a prophet to guide them. All right? So then we get to verse 27. It says, Daniel answered to the king and said, no wise men, enchanters, magicians, or astrologers can show to the king the mystery that the king has asked. All right? So if the king probably just heard that, he probably went crazy again. Like, they already told me that. Now you come in here saying you've got the interpretation in the dream. Now you're saying that nobody can do it. Again, so it's kind of reflecting that verse 10 when even his own magicians and enchanters were like, man, nobody can do this. What you're asking, like, nobody can do. All right, so this is what Daniel says right in the next verse. But there is a God in heaven who reveals mysteries, and he has made known to the king Nebuchadnezzar what will be in the latter days. Your dream and the visions of your head as you lay in bed are these. All right, so their own words condemn them, right? So we've got these Babylonians who thought they were great and their gods were good and all these things. And so their own words condemn them. We find that the God of Israel, right, the God who they thought they took captive of, that, you know, when they destroyed Judah, they thought, man, our God is greater than their God. What they find out is that the God of Israel is the one who is greater than their gods, right, than their wisdom. And all the things that they thought were great, that God, the God of Israel, is way above those things. You got to flip that from you, Cam, right? Because he does what they say cannot be done. What couldn't be done, God does, and he provides with. And then it ends here on verse 30. But as for me, this mystery has been revealed to me, not because of any wisdom that I have more than all the living, but in order that the interpretation may be known to the king, that you may know the thoughts of your mind. So, again, man, just like our bottom line has been, like, the first week, that it's not about Daniel. It's not about Daniel, that it's about God. And even Daniel says that. He said, man, it's not me. It's not any wisdom that I have or that any wisdom that's greater than anybody else, right? It's not me, that it's God. So God is getting the glory through Daniel, right? As Daniel was standing before this king that has taken him captive, God is getting the glory from that king, that God is getting glory from those who thought, right, that they were great, that God is getting the glory. They thought they had power, but God is giving the glory over this whole audience because of what he's doing through Daniel. And Daniel's humble enough to admit that before everyone, before the king, because he could have took credit, like, yeah, that's me, you know, Daniel, you know how I do. But he didn't, right, that he was humble before the king and let him know, hey, this is what's up, that God is doing this. It's not anything that's with me. All right, so here's where you guys can grab your handouts, and we're going to start ripping through some things, how this thing is going to apply for us. And the first thing that I would say is that hear from God, do what he says. Hear from God, do what he says. So here's the truth of it, that all those magicians and all those sorcerers, right, they acted like they had faith in their God. But when it came down to it, when it came down to crunch time, they were like, man, our gods can't do it. Man, nobody, they can't do it. These guys that dwell with us, man, they can't do it. Right? I mean, so they weren't really believing in their system. They weren't really believing in their gods because their actions were absolutely showing, man, like, it's the total opposite. The total opposite of what they were trying to imply. So when it came to crunch time, when the king was putting pressure on them, they were like, we can't do it. Our gods can't do it. And it made no difference in their conduct. So, and that kind of applies to us here as followers of Jesus, man. Like, are we hearing from God? Are we doing what he says? Or is our belief in God, is it hollow? Like, is our religion, like, something of convenience? Like, you know, are you hearing from God? And if you are you doing what he says? All right, let's read this little quote right here. It says that today many people profess to believe in God, but it is also a hollow belief. In essence, they are practical atheists because they don't listen to him or do what he says, right? And so, I mean, that's a true statement, is that if we're hearing from God and we're not doing what he says, then is he truly God in our lives? Right? If we know his word has been spoken over us and we know that we are to be obedient, if he's our master, he's our king, our God, right? We say that, but if we're not doing what he says, then is he truly our God, right? Is it truly deep in us, or is it something that's of convenience, right? Or something that's, is it hollow in us? Are we truly serving the living God, right? So the next one I would say is that faith is what it takes. Faith is what it takes. Because we look at how Daniel replied to that order of being killed, right? That Arioch came to him and was like, you're going to be killed. And look how Daniel replies to him. He says, man, you appoint me a time with the king because I'm going to tell him this dream and interpretation, right? And like I said before, that this evidence of a man who's spending daily time with God, because as soon as matter came, he had a response for it. It was his life with God was an everyday thing. To when a situation, when a crisis came, that he had a response, that he had a godly response, right? He has something there, and it was evidence of an everyday thing, right? That our faith is built in the time that we spend in God, our time in prayer, our time in the word, that our faith is built there. And you can absolutely see the evidence of Daniel's faith in his reply to that king. So faith is what it takes for us. Because what does the Bible say about faith? That it's impossible, what? To please God without it. We have to believe, right? We have to believe that he's a rewarder of those who seek him. That it takes faith even to please God. That it takes faith to walk into the works that are prepared for us by God. Those good works that are prepared for us by Jesus. It takes faith to walk into those and to do them. An everyday thing, though. It's an evidence of an everyday thing when we can do that. When we can walk into those good works, right? When faith is happening, it's evidence of our everyday thing with God. So how do we get faith? Like, how does faith happen? Where does faith increase at? And I will say this, that it happens in prayer, right? So I will say this, your next blank is don't panic. Don't panic, pray. Don't panic, pray. Because look what happened with Daniel. Crisis came, my man didn't panic. What did he do? He got some friends together, he got some boys together. When they got down together, they got down on their knees, they got together in a little prayer meeting time, and they prayed and saw God's mercy, right? So when we panic, when we come into a crisis and we panic, it's showing our feeling of hopelessness, that there's no hope, right? When we panic, it confirms our hopelessness. But when we go into prayer, when we don't panic and we pray, it confirms what? That our hope in God is firm. Instead of panicking when we go into prayer, it's only confirming, man, that, hey, my hope is in God. That's where my hope lies. So that's where I'm going to go. I'm not going to go into panic mode, but I'm going to go into a mode of prayer because that's where my hope lies. It lies in God. Go ahead and flip that for me, Cam. Okay? So that's the thing. So, and the next thing I will say about prayer, when we're going into prayer, I will say is that we need to acknowledge who God is in prayer. We need to acknowledge. I mean, look how Daniel prayed. When he prayed, I mean, God, you are the God who lives forever. You are the one who is setting up history. You're the one who is giving might and understanding. I mean, he had this frame of who God was when he was in prayer, man, that we all need to have. Like, even as we pray, our Father who's in heaven. I mean, there's a framework that happens when we go in prayer, man, that we acknowledge who God is in prayer. Little quote for you. It says that we ought to, in prayer, to look up to God as the God of heaven, as a God above us, and who has dominion over us, to whom we have adoration and allegiance, a God of power who can do everything, right? So I would say, man, in your own prayer life, I mean, when you think about your prayer life, I mean, do you have that picture of God when you go into prayer? Like, is he this great God who's above everything, who's over you, who's your prayer life? And what does God look like when you speak to him? All right, so the second thing I would say, after we acknowledge that, we have to seek who God is in prayer, that we have to seek who he is in prayer, because what did they do? It says that they sought God's mercy in prayer, right? So even for us, man, as we're seeking God through prayer, man, we want to seek his love, his healing, his comfort, his grace, all of who he is. We want to seek those aspects of who he is in prayer, seeking who he is in prayer. And we know that we serve a God who answers us, that we serve a God who answers his people, right? That his ear isn't shut to us, but we serve a God who answers prayer as we seek him. Okay, last one. Nothing is impossible for God. Last blank. That nothing is impossible. impossible for God. And I would say, even for us, man, how many times, right, do we have to, you know, be wrong? How many times does mankind have to be wrong for us to truly believe that? Right? How many times does, you know, a doctor have to say something's wrong, it's going to be permanent? Like, you, my older brother, he had braces on when he was little. It said, man, he's going to be in braces forever. That's just who, that's what's going to happen, right? Of course, he grew up and he became a track star. okay, doc, you're wrong. All right, just even over us, right? So even over me, like where I came from, like I should have been a guy who was in jail. I should have been on drugs. I should have been a father who left his kids. You know, all those different things that people say over us, right? That people try to proclaim over us. I mean, it doesn't happen, right? I mean, even when we face impossible situations, that God is a God who makes the impossible possible. That he truly is a God who makes the impossible possible. And I would say, man, stop listening to mankind and listen to God. Because this is what he says. Well, this is what I would say, is that we put our hope and our future and our lives into the hands of idols who cannot affect our history. So many times we listen to the voice of mankind. We listen to the things of mankind, the things before God. We listen to those things instead. But what we can say about those things is that they cannot affect our history. They are blind to our future, and they have no power to change anything. But so many times we have these idols in front of us, in front of our lives, instead of God. That we have the voice of other people instead of the voice of God in front of us. That we put these things before God, and what we can say about them is that they never satisfy, because we have to keep going back to them to get that feeling again, right? That we have to keep going back to them to re-get that feeling again. They never satisfy. So, like, man, what are the idols in our lives that we put before God, that we're listening to, that we praise, right? That we praise these things. We may not be literally bowing down to them, but where is our time going? Where is your time going? Where is your allegiance going? Where is your faith going? When you wake up in the morning, what's the thing that you think about, right? Even as I'm saying, when you see impossible situations, what do you think about? Are you thinking about how God can take care of that? How God is about to make himself known and be glorified in that situation? Like, where does your mind go to? Right? Because like I said, so many times we put idols in front of us instead of God. Well, what does he say about himself? Luke chapter 1, verse 37, verse 18 and 27. Mark chapter 9, verse 22 and 25. And there's a bunch of other scriptures, but basically what they're saying is that what is impossible with man is possible with God. Every time, what is possible with man is impossible with man is possible with God. Like, even our salvation. Like, there was no way that we could do it, right? There's no way that any one of us could completely obey the law, right? It was impossible for one of us to do that. But what? God made a way that he sent his son to die for us so that we can walk into this relationship with him, that the impossible was made possible through God, okay? So I would say for us that there is hope for me, that there's hope for my city, that there's hope for my school, there's hope for my home, there's hope for my family, that there's hope in all these things because of who dwells in us. There's hope in all these things. When we look at your school, man, there's hope for your school, right? There's hope for you to start a prayer meeting, to be an influential person there. I mean, look at Daniel. He's a guy in the land captivated, who have captivated his people, right? And his God is the one that's affecting his nation. So what we say about us, man, like even in your school, in your school, in your home, amongst your friends, man, that there is hope in you for all those around you, because God is dwelling in you. All right? So the band can get ready to come on up and get ready to rip. And I'm going to kind of end on this one little thing right here. And I'm going to kind of end with how Daniel responded in prayer. I mean, because he prayed that prayer, and then, man, he was, like, praising God and thanking God and, I mean, giving God his all, because God made this mystery known to him, that he revealed this great mystery to him. I mean, he was just giving it to Jesus, like, I mean, giving it to God. Like, God, I thank you, I praise you, because you made known to me this interpretation, this dream. I mean, now I don't have to die, right? It's a good thing. So I would say for us, man, if God revealed that mystery to Daniel, how much more should our praise be to the greatest mystery that was revealed forevermore, for any time period, the greatest mystery revealed to mankind? And it's this right here, it's Colossians chapter 1. And it says, the mystery for the hidden ages and generations, but now revealed to his saints. To them God chose to make known how great among the Gentiles are the riches of the glory of this mystery, which is Christ in you, the hope of glory. So I would say, man, for us, right, the greatest mystery that was revealed during the time when Jesus came, right, that he came, he died, and now what? Christ is in us. That whole gospel message, right, hidden for ages, revealed during that time, revealed for us. I mean, how much more should our praise be to the greatest mystery that was ever revealed? And that's Christ coming to earth, dying for us, making access to God for us through his cross. I mean, how much more should our praise and our allegiance be to Jesus and to God because of the greatest mystery ever revealed? So, I mean, as we get ready, everybody, we can all stand up as we get ready to go into prayer. So I've got a few responses, and I'll read through them, and we'll work our way back down and see who we can pray for. Okay, so the first one says, man, I want to give my life to Jesus. That I want to give my life to Jesus, that's the first one. And then the second one says, man, I want to return from exile to God. So maybe you've been away from God, maybe you've left for a while, but now you're like, man, I want to return, I want to come back to a relationship with him. And the third one, maybe you would say, man, my belief has been hollow. It hasn't been real, but I want it to be. That I want there to be a change to happen in me, a transformation to happen, that I want it to be real for me, this thing that I'm saying I believe in. And then the very last one, if you would say, man, I need Jesus to do an impossible task for me, that I've got things in my life that I'm facing, and I need Jesus to do something about it because there's nothing in my own power that I can do about this. I've even tried in my own power and I've failed repeatedly. Like, I need Jesus to do this for me, because if he doesn't, then I'm lost. And what the good news about that is, what, that Jesus is ever present, right? That he answers the prayers of his people, and he said out of his own mouth that what's impossible with man is possible with God if we believe. Okay? So with every head bowed, with every eye of every student in here, I want you guys to close your eyes, every student. Bow your head, close your eyes. So I'm going to read through these responses, and if that's you, I want you to throw up your hand. And what we do is that our leaders will come to you after a song, and we're going to pray with you. We want to pray to you about that thing. Okay, so the first one, if you will say, man, I want to give my life to Jesus. You say, man, I want to give my life to Jesus today for the first time. I want to respond to him for the first time. I want to give my life to him. If you say, man, that's me, go ahead and throw your hand up nice and high. And, man, we want to pray with you. Okay, second one, if you would say, man, I want to return from exile, that I've walked away from God, that I've walked away from him, but man, I want to return to him. I want to come back into relationship with him. If that's you, man, I want you to throw your hand up nice and high. Okay, third one, if you would say, man, my belief has been hollow, it hasn't been real, but I want it to be, like, I want my belief to be real and authentic. I want it to go deep. I want it to be seen in my life through other people. If you would say, man, that's me, raise your hand. Okay, very last one. If you would say, I need Jesus to do an impossible task for me. I need Jesus to do an impossible task in my life. If that's you, I just want you to throw your hand up, and I want to pray with you. Okay, man, if we could all lift our hands together before God today, and we're just going to pray, just get into a mode of worship. So even as you guys are just out there right now, with your hands lifted, and go ahead and just offer up thanks unto God. Just offer thanks unto him, because he's the hope of the nation. He's the hope in you. And there's nothing but hope when it comes to Jesus. Man, there's nothing that we face that's impossible for him. And we have hope. We have a future with him. Man, there is hope in Jesus.